You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thanks for joining us as we morph our way, travel our way through time from Sunday into Memorial Day, Monday. And most importantly, we honor and remember so many fallen heroes, those who gave their lives in service to our nation and paid the ultimate price and made the ultimate sacrifice to protect our freedoms. And I really appreciate that Brad Keselowski not only had his race car decked out in the stars and stripes, but also made sure to note the fact that without those that we honor on Memorial Day, he wouldn't be able to do what he does, drive a car for a living, and we wouldn't be able to do what we do. And that includes me as a talk show host and working from my home for what is now the end of the ninth week. So this Sunday night into Monday morning marks 9 weeks since I started working from the after hours super secret home base. And there have been ups and there have been downs and there have been tears and there have been many emotions, an emotional roller coaster, pretty much every emotion under the sun. And for goodness sakes, many of them I experienced and happened over the last few days, over the weekend. And I am overwhelmed by the number of messages that you all sent on Twitter and on Facebook. And my weekend started with the signing of the papers, many, many, many papers. but it was a relief. There was great joy in being able to take the keys for a house of my own. For the first time in my life, I own a little plot of land with this cute and cozy little house, and I'm not sure it feels real yet. Closing was put off by a couple of days, and so it was taking place on Friday. I was grateful to have it done before the holiday weekend, and it was really a culmination for me. 5 years of planning and saving money and praying and daydreaming and then searching for the right place. And even in these final few weeks, the nonstop paperwork, statements and stubs and communicating with the bank and making sure that I had the money that I needed. And then on Friday, it was a race. It was a race to the bank to get the check and then over to the house to go through the final walkthrough and then to sign the papers sitting at the kitchen table that I actually purchased from the previous owners. And so there is one piece of furniture in the house right now. And so that was the highest of highs, as tired as I was on Friday early afternoon. But then my sweet cat Ellie took a turn for the worse on Saturday evening. So after getting a little bit of work done on Friday, I was going to go back over to the house and take a lamp and take a couple of plants and put a few things inside. And I couldn't leave Ellie. She took a terrible turn for the worse. And I knew that last week I needed to say goodbye to her. And I'd had some pain medication that the doctor had given me months ago just to help her because she had lost a lot of weight and she wasn't eating the same. And the doctor was pretty sure that she had pancreatic cancer. So they had discovered a mass with an ultrasound. And there really wasn't anything that they could do without complicated procedures. And I wasn't going to put my cat through that. And so I knew at some point she might start to go downhill. And at the beginning of last week, she was eating even less. And I went through the agonizing process of trying to decide whether or not it was the right time to say goodbye to her. It's always such an agonizing decision. I know I shared this with you a little bit on the show early last week, and I had also put it on social media a little bit. And for those of you who are pet lovers, you understand how hard it can be to decide if this is the right time, you know, to put a cat or a dog down. And so I had decided earlier last week that it was probably the right time, that she had taken a turn, and I didn't want her to suffer. But the pain meds helped her, and she would eat a little bit here or there. She would drink water. She was still using the litter box, and there was hope. On Tuesday, Wednesday, there was hope, and I thought maybe she's going to be okay, and I can help her through this, and we'll go a few more weeks, maybe a couple more months. And then Friday night, I was down to the last pain medication that I had for her, and she took just an even more drastic turn, and it was terrible to see. As much as it was awful to contemplate taking her to the vet for the last time, it was even worse to watch her struggle. And it was confirmation. I knew for sure that I had to take her and I had to say goodbye. And gosh, there were some pretty terrible hours when I wasn't sure if the vet was going to be able to make time for her. So they didn't have any appointments. They were completely booked for weeks, as you can imagine, with vets' offices reopening. And I know it's the case in many places around the country. So I call up. I barely slept on Friday night, worried about her and wondering where she was and if she was okay. And I didn't want to bring her upstairs and put her on my bed because she would try to jump off, and her back legs just weren't working anymore. She could barely walk. And for her to try to jump on and off furniture would have been even scarier. And so on Saturday morning, I call first thing. It's pouring down rain. And I call first thing even before the vet office is open. And I beg them, essentially plead with them, please, can you make time for me? And can you make time for my cat today and explain what was happening? And they did. They were very kind. They asked me to come in late morning. And so in order to distract myself on Saturday morning, because I had 3.5 hours to wait, and I spent a little time with Ellie, and I put her on her bed, and I tried to talk to her, and she wouldn't eat or drink anything. But do you know, she purred the entire time. As bad as it was, as much as she was in pain, I'm sure, she purred the entire time. Anytime I spoke to her on Saturday morning, she just purred away at me. And that's really Ellie. She purred every day of her 18 years and 2 months, never missed a day. So I went to the grocery store and I try to distract myself with getting a few groceries. And I get home on Saturday morning and I can't find Ellie. I don't know where she went. She's not downstairs. So I'm putting all of my groceries away and I'm calling her. But I was leery of calling her because if she was somewhere and she was sleeping, I didn't want her to come to where I was. And so I put everything away and I can't find her anywhere downstairs, not under the chair, not next to the water bowl where she had essentially stayed all Friday night. She wasn't on her bed. She wasn't on the couch where, you know, she had kind of dragged herself a couple times. So I go upstairs. And wouldn't you know, somehow, my 18-year-old cat, who could barely walk, had gotten herself upstairs into my bedroom closet and was curled up on my slippers. Oh, my gosh. I mean, it broke my heart. I still don't know how she got upstairs because she hadn't been upstairs all week. And that was kind of the first sign that things were really bad. And so she's in there and she's in my closet and she's curled up on my slippers. And I talked to her for a second. But again, I didn't want to talk to her too much because I was worried that she would try to come out of there and walk around. So I left her in there and she stayed in there until I put her in the cat carrier and took her to the vet and spent the last hour just talking to her and saying goodbye to her. And again, I know many of you who are listening understand that process and know how painful it can be. And the vet was very kind and his assistant was very kind and they did everything they could to make her comfortable. And so that was hard. And it was such a strange roller coaster of emotions, from the happy tears on Friday, taking the keys to my first ever house, and then saying goodbye to my sweet Ellie, who, by the way, lived with me in 8 different places. So she moved with me 8 different times in 5 different states and at least a dozen jobs that I counted. Countless miles in the car. I mean, I adopted this kitty when she was 3 weeks old in Oklahoma City. And she was really a constant companion with me longer than most of my relationships have lasted outside of family and a few friends. And so I'm grateful for her. And I wouldn't trade all the joys of being a pet owner, a pet mom, for the pain of what the last week was like. But I just want to say thanks again. So many of you sent kind words and you were compassionate and really understanding what I was going through. So long way to say Thank you. You know me, I usually take the scenic route with my stories, but, you know, my long-winded way of saying thank you so much. I wish I could respond to all of your comments. I've tried to respond a couple times and just tell you thank you, but I really appreciate how sweet and how kind you were over the last couple of days. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Also talking about Ellie helps a little bit, right? It does help sometimes to talk about our pets and our family members and friends that we lost too. I know it's therapeutic for me in many ways. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. These are challenging times for so many reasons. I think a lot of layers and wrinkles that we never even thought of. And certainly when it comes to home ownership and mortgages, we know all about it. I know all about it. Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need some mortgage assistance, contact the team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. And we're asking you who you honor and remember on this Memorial Day Monday. Emma on Twitter says, my uncle, Vietnam, he was drafted at 18. He was made a tunnel rat. When he came home, I was young. Fireworks never was something my uncle went to. He had a Purple Heart. He donated to worthy causes. My uncle has helped more than himself. He's a good man. Donna on Twitter sends a picture of her aunt. Amazing. On this Memorial Day, which is also her birthday. So Donna, happy birthday. She says, I honor my late aunt who was among the first WACs in World War II. What an amazing photo. And producer Chris is retweeting a lot of these from our show account After Hours CBS when you share them. Daniel on Twitter, both of my pawpaws both survived Normandy and lived long lives. And I can't ask for much more. Oh, goodness. It just it touches my heart that you share. And I know, as I was just talking about my cat, it's a cat, right? It's not a person, but it does help to talk about and to share photos and to share our stories and our memories of those people that we love, especially on this Memorial Day. We want other people to recognize and honor them too. So thank you for sharing your photos specifically. Scott on Facebook, as a USS Callahan plank owner, and then he puts in parentheses a commissioning crew member. Thank you for explaining. I'm proud to honor Congressional Medal of Honor winner Admiral Daniel Judson Callahan, killed in action along with 76 other sailors on the bridge of the USS San Francisco, as well as the 47 sailors who perished aboard the USS Callahan, the second to last ship sunk in World War II and the final ship sunk by kamikaze attack. Scott, thank you for sharing that. Kendall on Facebook, Lieutenant Ham, U.S. Navy, and Lieutenant Dunn in the U.S. Navy killed in a crash in 1994. AW1 Quinn, also from the Navy, and AW1 Escobar in the Navy, killed in a helicopter crash in 1995. Dana on Facebook, my sister's husband, Patrick, who served in the Army. James says, my father, James O. Kitts, who served in the Army in World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. Andy on Facebook, my last brother, Victor Salazar, both served in the Marines and the Army, 12 years altogether. Ivan, I had an uncle killed in France during World War II, Charles Hefner, and a cousin killed in Korea, Ivan Hefner. Let's see. I'm trying to go through these, and I know I've read some of them, so I don't want to repeat. Lorenzo, my grandpa who served in the Korean War. He's a veteran who will always be my hero, looking down at me until I see him again. And then he sends us a picture of his headstone. So Lorenzo, thank you for sharing that on Facebook or on Twitter. I'm so grateful that you will share these memories and photos with us. Our phone number too, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. In the NBA community, the basketball world is mourning the loss of Hall of Famer Jerry Sloan. He was inducted in 2009 after a 26-year head coaching career, most of those with the Utah Jazz. He was very tough. He was very no-nonsense. He coached Hall of Famers, Karl Malone and John Stockton. The Jazz went to 15 consecutive playoffs. And as we saw with The Last Dance, kind of relive those moments through the eyes of the Chicago Bulls. They faced off in the NBA Finals against the Bulls in both 97 and 98. And that was Jerry Sloan, his team. He played for the Bulls, and then coached against them. So some pretty... I should add to that, he also coached the Bulls. He was with the Bulls himself and then the Baltimore Bullets. He was a guy that just epitomized the old school, the toughness. And so he is a major loss, but I'm thankful that he was around for his induction into the Hall of Fame. It's a guy who died from complications with Parkinson's. And he was 78 when he passed away on Friday. He was already going through some dementia and had been diagnosed in 2016. And for those of you who are longtime sports fans or basketball fans, you'll remember that the basketball world really mourned that diagnosis as well. Eddie Sutton, who is a longtime coach of Oklahoma State men's basketball, as one of his stops in college hoops. There were more. But he was one that I crossed paths with, and he had just found out that he would be inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame this summer. If it takes place, it may not take place on schedule in Massachusetts, but he had just found out. And I think there are a lot of reasons why he didn't get into the Hall of Fame before 2020, some of it relating to the demons that he fought in his personal life, alcoholism. He went through a long battle and had some relapses and some struggles that were well documented. But his players spoke so highly of him and of his teaching ability and the way that he turned his different basketball programs into families. And he had multiple sons who went into the coaching ranks. His wife, Patsy, was also with him, really his constant companion. And so just two losses for the basketball world. I crossed paths with Coach Sutton my time when I was in Oklahoma City, and I was covering both OU and Oklahoma State basketball. And he was so fiery, and he was also so interesting to listen to when it came to basketball. So we'll get a couple of different sound bites from guys who played for those two legendary coaches as we go through this hour. And I'd love to hear from you again on Twitter or Facebook.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The voice of Governor Andrew Cuomo, state of New York. And I've kind of joked about it a little bit, but it's fairly transparent of the governor of New York and California as well, whose states are not yet reopened. So the stay-at-home orders have not been completely lifted, but the sports teams are welcome back to restart their training, to open their facilities, and ultimately to hold games. And as the governor points out, without fans, so the fans can stay home and enjoy the distraction and enjoy the competition. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks again for your messages. I just now posting a photo, my last photo actually, of Ellie on Facebook, because I did post one on Twitter, my personal Facebook page, but if you listen to me tell my stories, I feel like you should be able to see a picture as well. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's our toll-free line, and it's sponsored by Geico. Geico introduces the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. Many of you are still responding about the match two, if we're going to be technically accurate. Phil Mickelson, Tom Brady, one team losing by one stroke or by one hole to Tiger Woods on his home course, and Peyton Manning, who was really steady, funny and steady. You know, they all had some bad shots. This is not what Brady and Peyton do for a living, but Peyton had some great putts as well, and it was kind of fun to hear Tiger Woods cheer for him. So we'll get back to the match, and I'd love to hear from you if you want to call on the phones. But we've got a lot of tweets and Facebook messages that I can share. But I mentioned Jerry Sloan and the toughness that he epitomized both as a player as well as a coach. It's kind of funny to hear Carl Malone, who did various interviews, both he and John Stockton, over the weekend after Jerry passed away. Carl, the mailman Malone, actually tells a story on KSL TV about how his coach wanted him to put him up and go for it.
He told me, did I want to fight him? He said that to me. Stopped practicing, came in there and said, damn it, I'll fight you. Fight you as long as I can see you, but I'm keeping it clean.
Yeah, yeah.
As young and dumb as I was at the time, I didn't want to try him because he would have tried me.
He was known for his toughness and his defensive intensity when he was a player. So Jerry Sloan was over a decade in the NBA, and it was injuries that cut his playing career short. But he was then a coach for 26 years, 23 of those with the Utah Jazz. And I totaled up I didn't count them all by hand, but I took the totals from various different places. Regular season and postseason wins. 1,319 total victories as a coach, which is amazing. John Stockton, another Hall of Famer that played on those teams in the 90s. The two that ran into the Chicago Bulls in 97 and 98, as we saw in The Last Dance. Stockton remembers the leadership of his former coach.
He was really getting on me in my career to be more of a leader, be more assertive, be more vocal on the court. And so the next game I had an opportunity, the game wasn't going our way, and so I stepped up and called the timeout for our team so it wouldn't get away from us. And when I got to the bench, I was greeted rather rudely by Coach Sloan, who thought he was the only one that should call a timeout, and really kind of deflated my bubble a little bit. I thought I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. He said, no, do you want to coach this team? Which means, do you want to fight to be the coach of this team? Yeah. And so I declined.
Challenging everyone to fight and asserting the control there and the man who's in charge so everybody knows. After Sloan played in the NBA, he started his coaching career at Evansville. That was his alma mater in March of 1977. Interestingly enough, he backed out after 5 days, so he took that job, but then backed out after 5 days, and he only cited personal reasons. And for those of you who remember, this is before my time, but for those of you who remember, later that year, the Evansville team plane crashed after taking off, and everybody on board died. So, I mean, if you're Jerry Sloan, imagine what that feels like to you. You could have been on that plane. You would have been on that plane if you hadn't backed out of the coaching job after less than a week. So he then returned to basketball with his team that he played with, the Bulls. He was a scout. He was an assistant. He took over as a head coach for a couple of seasons. They did make the playoffs under Jerry Sloan, but then he was fired in Chicago and moved on to Utah, where he was an assistant there as well for several years, took over as the head coach, and really spurred what was a run that's legendary for Jazz fans. 16 straight winning seasons, 15 playoff appearances in a row, and the Malone-Stockton era is what he is most known for. Give you one more soundbite from a former NBA player, Rajah Bell, who looks at the Jazz now and sees that Jerry Sloan's fingerprints are all over the franchise.
I really do believe that Jerry is part of the DNA of what we still think of Utah Jazz teams to be, which are hard-nosed, tough teams, won't give an inch, will scrap for anything they can get their hands on. And I think Jazz teams, at least for the foreseeable future, will play like that.
Rajah Bell remembering what Jerry Sloan brought to the table, as others have over the course of the last several days. Here's an interesting note about Jerry. And we know how hard it is to coach for long stretches with any one team in any sport. I mean, coaching is a career choice that comes with no job security. And if you're really good at it, great. You may stick around for a decade or so. You may continue to find new jobs, but you're never on solid footing, on solid ground. We see coaches who lead their teams to the playoffs and then get fired all the time. So it's a profession that has zero job security, which there is very little loyalty, and also a profession that takes a lot out of you. I mean, it costs many coaches their health and maybe takes years off their life. We know that to be the case in any sport. You hear former coaches talk about the stress and the nonstop rat race that comes with that choice. So he was with the Jazz for 23 years as the head coach, and over the time that he was the coach, there were 245 other coaching changes in the NBA and 5 different teams that expanded into the league while he was there. So Charlotte, Memphis, Toronto, Orlando, Minnesota didn't even exist when he took over as the head coach of the Jazz and was there again for 2+ decades. 245 other coaching changes around the league while Jerry Sloan was at the helm in Utah and clearly earning the respect of both his peers and his competitors. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Who do you honor and remember on this Memorial Day weekend as we head into the holiday Monday? It's about remembering our fallen heroes and paying tribute to them. So we're taking your photos and reading some of your stories. And I'd encourage those of you who are listening to go to our social media and see the threads as well.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The voice of David Griffin from the Cleveland Cavaliers. Oh, Cleveland Cavaliers. my fault. He was with the Cavaliers, right? But David Griffin with the New Orleans Pelicans. Thank you, Dave, quickly in my ear. It didn't sound right even as I said it. I have to get my brain to remember now. NBA and NBA personnel. Man, it feels like forever since we've talked about an NBA game, and it was so hot and heavy as we were getting right down to the wire of the regular season. So forgive me, David, but thinking about the return of the NBA and what it means and what it will look like. And we do know that the association is moving in. They're kind of closing in and moving closer to a plan for returning. And we now think we know the where. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4227. That's our toll-free line, 855-212-4227. Right now, the NBA is in conversations with Walt Disney Company about using Disney World in Orlando. Now, there's a whole wide world of sports complex there with multiple arenas and facilities, For a while, it looked like the NBA might use 2 sites, one in Florida and one in Las Vegas. And so we don't know yet if the league is going to skip the rest of the regular season and go straight to the playoffs, which right now there's a really clear delineation, playoff teams versus non-playoff teams in the East. In the West, there are a couple of teams that you think could have made a run. It not beyond the realm of possibility, but you also have a relatively clear line there as well. It's hard as teams have worked so hard for so long and it got to the point where they'd played just under 70 games. For most of them, they had 14, 15 games left to go. And so there is the possibility they could skip the rest of the regular season, but they could finish out those games. There's still draft implications and draft position that have yet to be decided. And at the Wide World of Sports Complex, they have 3 arenas, plenty of hotels, as you can imagine, and they could restart either the season or the playoffs, and they could do it without having a whole lot of exposure to the outside. Now, for those of you who listened to my show last week, you know that I was quoting Jared Dudley of the Lakers, and he had said he'd had conversations with both Adam Silver as well as Michelle Roberts, who is the executive director of the union, and they had both said to him, the NBA is not going to restrict players from coming and going. You're not going to be stuck in a bubble. You don't have to stay in your hotel when you're not at the arena. So it's going to be a little bit different than, say, UFC, which could use a bubble because it was a couple of days while they would prepare for their fight cards. And then it wasn't that difficult for these guys to, you know, to stay sequestered where they were to be sure that there was no contact and no chance of them getting the virus once they had gotten into the facilities and gotten tested. So Jared Dudley said, we'll be allowed to leave, but it will be at our own risk. If we get the virus while we're outside the bubble, the Orlando bubble, well, then we don't get to play. I mean, and that's the risk that we will take. You're on your own if you decide that you want to leave. But the NBA is not going to make players stay put in this Orlando bubble. Right now, it looks like the NBA will resume games before the end of July. But that would require multiple weeks where they would be back together. We had initially heard of a 25-day plan. Just to jog your memory, the 25-day plan was 11 days of individual workouts and then 2 weeks of practice time where the teams could run full court and could actually work together again. And so, there are various concepts out there similar to Major League Baseball, but according to the NBA spokesperson himself, so this is not rumors or speculation, this is actually Mike Bass coming out and saying the NBA is now negotiating with Disney to try to bring our games back, to use that Wide World of Sports complex as a campus, almost a college campus, for games, for practices, for housing. That's a lot of NBA players and a lot of teams, especially if they go ahead and they finish the regular season. So you can imagine the logistics of getting teams in and out of those arenas, cleaning the locker rooms. And I know they'll have the best of the best, the top of the line, both resources and facilities, not to mention testing. But the whole idea, I mean, hundreds of players in and out on a regular basis into the facilities using the same arenas and locker rooms, and it will require some caution. Yes, safety protocols. Yes, testing. Definitely caution on the part of athletes as well to recognize that if one of them leaves and comes back with the virus, there's a chance they can infect other people and then shut the whole thing down. I mean, that's always a possibility. Now, in Florida, they've had really good success early on with reopening multiple phases now, and you've had people go back to the beaches, and resorts are now taking reservations and reopening. And, you know, for the most part, the entire state, not every county in the state, but, and we heard from Pete Prisco earlier in the show, he's in Broward County, and they haven't reopened everything yet. But I, like many of you, have friends in Florida, family members in Florida, and they're enjoying some of the restaurants reopening and the facilities and gyms. My friend Erin lives in Orlando, actually, and she said that her Y, she's a member at the Y, her and her family, and the Y is now taking essentially appointments where you book a time where you can go and you can use the facilities, and they're only allowing a certain number of people in at the same time now, but you kind of sign up for your time slot. And Florida hasn't seen a major spike in terms of virus cases and the community spread. And so right now they're enjoying a modicum of success in reopening. And I'm sure that appeals to the NBA. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Now, here's the latest that we hear from Major League Baseball. And I know many of you have wondered, where are they in their negotiations? Well, they're still negotiating. Going back now 10 days, owners, team management presented their proposal to the union, the 30 different teams. That goes back to May 15th. So they've had it for quite a while. And remember, we spoke with Paul Fry of the Orioles last week, and he said, for me, the priority is safety. We've heard the likes of Blake Snell and others come out and say, I'm not playing for less money. I mean, Noah Syndergaard. Now, his reason for being on social media was a beef with an apartment complex owner. But he also was tweeting about baseball asking for the players to take a pay cut and to take less than the money that they agreed to. And so the union has kind of gone through the various pieces of the proposal from baseball, and there are some concerns. According to union leadership, what they're most concerned about is testing. and wanting more testing than what baseball is proposing, right? So the union is looking at protecting its highest risk players. Even with professional athletes, there might be pre-existing health conditions that would cause them to be higher risk. I mean, we know we have cancer survivors in Major League Baseball. Access to pre- and post-game therapies. Testing frequency is a big one. The protocols that would be in place if someone pops positive for COVID-19. And then they're also wondering about how the stadiums and the locker rooms, the clubhouses will be cleaned and what type of procedures they will have to use and have to go through for cleaning. This is such a small scale analogy, so I recognize that it's not nearly as many people or as much space. But my dentist office sent an email last week indicating that they would be taking appointments following Memorial Day. And of course, they're opening on a limited basis. There are not nearly as many appointments available, similar to my vet, you know, when I couldn't get an appointment for Ellie at any juncture last week until I called and begged on Saturday morning. And so my dentist office sent this list, and I mean, it is extensive. Probably a dozen different hoops that have to be jumped through. So no multiple people in the waiting room. You have to call from your car to indicate that you are ready, and they will usher out the last patient and usher you in. So they're only cleaning the teeth of one patient at a time. I mean, it's not a big doctor, a big dentist's office, a big office, but generally you could have 5-6 people in there getting their teeth cleaned or, you know, getting other procedures done at the same time, but they're having one patient in at a time, and they're cleaning and sanitizing everything. They're asking people to wear masks until they're, you know, until it's time for their procedure. They're cleaning to be done, of course. That's pretty standard. But in addition, they're also charging $20 per. So you have to pay extra money so that they can clean and sanitize everything. So a lot of procedures that they sent, and they asked us to reschedule appointments. So I had an appointment scheduled in, I think it was March. I don't remember exactly. But I had an appointment scheduled. And so they're reaching out to ask people to reschedule. And I'm not going to at this point. I mean, I'm pretty diligent about getting my teeth cleaned. And I try to make sure I follow all the kind of rules for dental health, but it just doesn't seem like it's worth it to jump through all those hoops, at least not right now. So I'm going to wait. Major League Baseball players are in kind of the same boat. They're wondering about the different hoops that have to be jumped through. They're wondering about safety. And that's the most important thing for them right now, according to Alex Avila.
Thing is, like, there really hasn't been much to talk about in that regard, just because, you know, there's nothing that's been proposed. So there really hasn't been anything to talk about. At least, you know, on the inside, you know, the main focus is like, well, for the players, the main focus has always been like, you know, well, if we get a season going, we get spring training going, well, how are we going to be able to do this in the safest manner possible for everyone that's going to have to be involved in this? And, you know, in my mind, and I know a lot of guys' minds, that's priority number one. Like, if we can't figure that out, it doesn't really matter, you know, what the economic situation is going to be.
Alex Avila on MLB Network Radio. And he says, you know, there's not been a whole lot of talk because we're still trying to figure things out. There's a proposal on the table from baseball, but as players, these are, you know, the things that we're worried about. We're wondering about the safety. We're wondering about the protection. And then he says at the end, which I think is significant, it's worth repeating. He says at the end, then we can figure out the economics. So do you know that baseball still has not presented the economics to the union? That's actually supposed to happen sometime this week, this upcoming week. So they're working out safety protocols, and baseball has put together a nearly 70-page manual that would kind of dictate how they clean and how they test and how they protect their players and their managers and various baseball personnel. And they hadn't even gotten to the point of where they would propose the 50-50 split in terms of revenue. And that's really been the part that most have talked about and that we've heard different baseball players have a strong aversion to. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio and on Facebook. What did you think of the match, too, with four really high-profile household name athletes that transcend their sports. Phil Mickelson, he had a formula for winning that he shared with the world on Twitter before they ever teed off in a deluge in the driving rain. So we'll hear from him as well as from you. You can find us on Twitter as well, After Hours CBS, on this Memorial Day Monday. Who do you remember and honor?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.